It's the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. The Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and a lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Hello, Paul. I'm fine. I'm a little bit tired, actually.
Are you?
Yeah.
Have you had a busy week?
Well, it seems to be conference and expo season, doesn't it? Exhibition season. It seems to sort of cluster around September, October, and again in sort of June, you know, May, June.
And of course, you just got over that, and it's Christmas, and you start with a Christmas party and all that
nonsense.
I don't
want to think about Christmas. But I was at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation 2016 yesterday, Tuesday. I know you have your Business Bunker show, so you were doing that. But it's really interesting to see the trends that are coming out. And I think you and I are uniquely placed sometimes doing this programme.
Absolutely.
In that we start to see clusters of things that are happening, which sort of adds up to a trend. So it was fascinating to be at that innovation thing for 2 days, because I'm starting definitely to see certain things that are happening in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And we live in very exciting times anyway, with technical developments and the way that you can build things together and put things together. And it's not just in software, is it? I mean, there's robotics, Internet of Things, driverless cars, all kinds of stuff happening, drones and all kinds of things happening.
And I think with food, food technology, I think it's been a little bit behind.
Yeah.
So there's been great advances, as I know it's your industry, in the finance sector and the way people are trading and doing stuff in finance and also in healthcare. Mm. But I think food's been a little bit behind, and now it's really catching up.
Absolutely.
People are really starting to think about the problems of serving food, cooking food, delivering food, making food, and I think it's really exciting. It's
absolutely, and there's this fusion, there's this coming together and reusing things that were developed for one industry that suddenly become available to the food industry. I'm thinking of things primarily like Amazon Dash, if you're familiar with that, which is a device which you can buy from Amazon, which will automatically reorder things that you normally reorder. And then people suddenly thought, well, I could do that with groceries too. I could do it with food. I could do it with takeaway. If I want a takeaway every Wednesday night, Amazon Dash can order it for me or whatever. So
there hasn't been much disruption in the food industry.
No.
And there definitely is now. And people are looking, I'm just seeing people really looking at the whole models of things and how they work. Yeah. You know, how do I go into a restaurant with all these different family members who all got different things that they want, and how do we accommodate that? How do we order it? How do we, you know, sort of make room for it?
Sure.
How do we deliver this stuff? Mm. And people are really starting to look at disrupting models, because let's face it, all the old big, huge food companies like Unilever and all that, you know, they've been around for a long time, and they've industrialised food, and I can just see that's all starting to break up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you see it from two ends of the market as well, don't you? Because there's this massive drive towards organic and healthy and homemade and artisan food, which was originally, people shied away from it because it was deemed expensive. But over recent years, people have put that to one side and said, you know what, I'd much rather pay more for something I know what I'm eating, or something that's healthy,
and cut
or
down
something
on
that's
my
good.
Waste. I mean, all that money you spend, and then you throw it in the bin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I spoke to some fascinating people at this innovation show. Mm. The first people, which was great to get an interview with, Ben Carter, and Ben's the UK marketing director at Just Eat.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Just Eat, as you know, are huge. Mm. And it was very interesting talking to him about, you know, what is the model of the takeaway trend and online ordering. And just to let you know, Just Eat's latest figures, I mean, you can't even imagine it, really. They have 13.4 million active users.
Wow.
Huge.
13 million?
Yeah. Their revenues are 247 million.
Wow.
It's massive. So Just Eat are a big player.
I don't know. Are they just a UK player, or are they on a wider basis than that?
They're all around the world. I think they're right. Australian, different, but they're mostly in the UK. The huge proportion of the business is in the UK, but it is global.
Right,
it is global, and they're pushing it out globally. Cool. Should we just have a quick listen to Ben? And fascinated about how he sees it going.
Yeah. Okay. Let's listen to Ben.
And it's the first day at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo 2016. Some incredible innovations in takeaways. And one of the biggest names in the whole sector, really, is Just Eat. I don't think there's anybody who hasn't heard of them. And for anybody who doesn't know, Just Eat effectively really, really helps you deliver your amazing food. And I'm joined by Ben Carter here. And Ben, just tell me a little bit about the model of Just Eat before we talk about some of the trends that you're spotting.
Sure. So Just Eat has been around for 10 years, and Just Eat's role really is to connect customers with the best restaurants in their area. So we have 27,500 restaurants in the UK on our platform, and last year we drove 65 million orders into those restaurants. So what that really means is that's £1.1 billion of food order value going into those restaurants from about 7 million customers last year. So the reason we have been successful and sort of our reason for being, if you like, is to help restaurant partners grow. And the way we do that is this year alone we'll invest about £40 million in marketing and technology, and as the UK marketing director, my role is to make sure that we are helping restaurants leverage our brand power and really making sure that customers can find the best food and the best restaurants in their area.
I mean, the size of all that stuff makes your head spin, really. I mean, if you think about 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, certainly, trying to get a takeaway from down the road was like, well, it's, I wouldn't say it's a traumatic experience exactly, but, you know, you just sort of have to go with whatever's on offer. It's been completely revolutionised.
Absolutely. So 10 years ago, we disrupted the market. And what we mean by that is that we basically said, you don't have to reach into the drawer for the menu. Actually, here is a way, first of all, online and most recently now on apps, of finding the best restaurants in your area. But the headroom is huge. The 6 out of 10 UK customers or consumers are still to order food online. So if you look at the growth we've experienced and also our competitors, you can just see the potential really for growing that business. And I think what underpins that and what excites me most about the next 10 years of our growth is that consumer expectations have fundamentally changed. So they expect now, because of the likes of Uber in terms of how you now order a taxi, food is exactly the same. So they expect to be able to access as many different choices of food, as many different restaurant brands, literally in minutes through their fingertips, and have it delivered to their office or their door within 30 minutes.
See, it's such a shame, because I've got a little drawer at home and it's full of all these dog-eared, you know, little menus where we then argue, oh, okay, which one are we going to have? Is it Indian? Is it, you know, whatever? And then, you know, we'd all argue over what choices. And people's expectations, if you say, have completely changed. So you'll have somebody in the family with a food allergy, or you'll have somebody who doesn't, you know, like chili or something. And now everybody expects to eat the food they want within their family, and it all arrive at the same time, and literally at your fingertips, and for it to be hot.
Absolutely. They want the food they want, when they want it, whatever mood that is, whatever food it is. And our job at Just Eat is to really help our restaurant partners grow. And the way we do that is by driving more customers into them in their local area. So last year we grew 40% year on year. So what that really means is that's 40% year on year order growth into restaurants across the UK. But also, when you've got 7 million customers in the UK, you've got more data on Britain's eating habits than anyone else. So what we can do is really unlock that data and use that data to again help our restaurant partners, looking at pricing, for example, in their area, looking at where there's cuisine gaps, looking at where actual demand is for different dishes, and how restaurants then sort of deliver on that demand. And I think the other thing is that it's not just about getting food on time, it's about getting great food on time. And there's a real duty now on this industry, and I think it's really topical, obviously, being here today at the Expo for the fourth year running. But actually, consumers expect restaurants to be taking health and sanitation really, really seriously. And obviously, there's the FSA ratings, which aren't compulsory yet. But we work very closely with our restaurant partners to make sure that they are understanding the FSA rating system and that they are making sure that they are climbing that system. Because actually, if you look at when you search for a restaurant on Just Eat, the restaurants that come top is based on consumer demand. So what that really means is if you've had high reviews on Just Eat, or if you've got high FSA ratings, you will do better than other restaurants within our search engine.
I also think it's interesting finding some of the exhibitors at the moment. There's quite a few new companies that are popping up in terms of managing your reputation, you know, as a theme. And to be honest, if you don't manage your reputation and if you're not at the top, you're not going to survive, are you? Because it is all about people power and it is all about feedback. And I think the only way you can grow as a truly good provider is you've just got to produce the best stuff, and your customer service has got to be good. Is there any trends that you're seeing in terms of this? Are people taking this seriously now? Restaurants really understanding that?
Yeah, that they are. Again, Just Eat, as the market leader, has a duty to work with them. And that's why, right from day one, we've been very clear that we are a reviews-powered engine. And so what that means is if you are a great restaurant making great food that you're delivering on time, and consumers and your customers are acknowledging that, you will sit highly on our search ranking. So what that then means is that when we are driving hundreds of thousands of visitors to that website or that app every night in a specific postcode, then your restaurant will be found. I think the other thing it's ironic is that customer expectations have completely changed in terms of getting food sort of to their fingertips. But what hasn't changed is that basically peer review and sort of word of mouth is still vitally important. And it doesn't matter what postcode you go in, what city you go in, it's about surfacing these local heroes, these local independents. And what Just Eat gives them is the brand power and the technology platform to reach those customers.
It's always been about word of mouth, hasn't it? I think you can drive somebody to try you once, but actually if that experience isn't good, they're just not going to come back again. And I think one of the interesting things about the data that you're collecting is that people can really see, can't they, and actually adjust their business if things aren't going well.
Yeah, and I think that's the great dichotomy of running a marketplace, if you like, is that you order through Just Eat and you order from your local independent restaurant. If that food is delivered late or if it's bad, then actually you blame Just Eat. You don't blame the restaurant. And so what we have to do and what we constantly do is to work with our restaurants to help them understand that actually they need to be giving a great experience every time. So adding more time onto the delivery time is not a great experience for a customer, because customers are busy and they're ordering food on their way home from work and they want that food when they get back. And if they suddenly get an email telling them that there's another half an hour added onto their delivery time, that's not a great experience. So there's an ongoing sort of piece of work, if you like, and as the market leader, we have the duty to make sure that we work so closely with them to make sure that they understand consumer expectations and are responding to those.
You could say that about any business, of course. Ben, is there anything that you're spotting here as well, just coming through as new trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, so a big thing for us is obviously all around food delivery. And if you look at packaging and if you look now at the advances in terms of actually getting food from A to B, and the most complex dishes can now be delivered as in sort of perfect condition. So I think that's a really interesting one. It's an area we're investing in. But also, again, in terms of branding within delivery as well. So we all know the importance now of branding that last mile. Again, giving that customer that end-to-end experience. And I think what's really interesting from a Just Eat point of view is how we really tap into our independent restaurants and really take them on that branding journey. Not just Eat branding, but also co-marketing with them.
Yeah, and I'm finding a lot of people are realising that collaboration is key. So we're beginning to talk to people, and yet they say, can we have this other person with us, because it's actually becoming a vital part of our business. Can I just move on? I've been on your stand, and you've got a lovely little thing that I want to take home with me, which is a robot. It's a delivery robot, and it looks like a dog, actually. No, don't laugh. It's lovely. And apparently you're trying to develop this technology, and I'd quite like it to pop up at my door, because I feel like I want to speak to it, although it's just a robot. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so we're working with a company called Starship Technologies on trialing robot delivery. I think, again, if you talk about customers' expectations, particularly in urban centres, they want food very quickly. And so what we're looking at is how we get food to customers quicker. So the reason we're trialing the robot is really to work out how that could actually work. So we've got live trials going on in Greenwich at the moment. We're one of the launch partners. Yeah, it's a cute little thing. We're trying to work out what to call it. But I think more seriously, it just really is a nod to the future. And it shows that, as I said, 10 years ago, we disrupted the market once. We have to continually disrupt this market. This marketplace, the food delivery marketplace, is so dynamic. It doesn't stand still, and Just Eat won't be standing still.
Well, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, I always think there's going to be drones flying around, but actually I wasn't really thinking there's going to be these little dogs that are wandering around Greenwich or whatever it is. They're so cute. And I just want one to bang on my door soon. So I hope that comes to market soon. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Wow, what a fantastic interview that was.
It is. It really is thought-provoking.
Yeah.
The delivery issue, especially from the environmental point of view, you can't keep having loads and loads of people in vans travelling all around the country, clogging the roads up. That's not going to work. And then environmentally, it's just not right. Mm. So they're really looking at alternatives, and the robot and the drones. I just have this vision where sometimes you see these films, don't you, that depict the 22nd century or the 23rd century, and you see things flying around. That feels like it's going to be coming true, really.
Well, as a joke, I said this earlier with the Tech Talk show. The Tech Talk show had a little tiny drone,
yeah,
and they were flying it around the studio here, and I caught it because it came at me, and I just caught it in my hand, and I went, I got the snitch.
And that's what, Quidditch. Harry Potter Quidditch,
And then you suddenly think, well, hold on a minute. When J.K. Rowling wrote that, it wasn't entirely possible to do any of that.
Yeah.
And within 10 years, technology, not that they've done it to do that, but you could now stage a real game of Quidditch using current technology.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's bizarre, isn't it?
I just want one of those broomsticks.
Yeah, exactly.
Although my husband would say I've already got one, obviously.
We won't go there.
No, we won't.
But what a fascinating interview with Ben, and really, really disrupting the market and looking at stuff. And it was interesting. One of the things we have in my house when my boys are home is we end up with a Chindian.
Indian, yeah.
Yeah, because half of us want an Indian takeaway and half want a Chinese, yeah.
There you go. So I think it's very interesting. Just Eat are obviously growing, and they have every intention to carry on that fast growth. Mm. And they know the only way they can continue that journey is to innovate, or it's all going to be very stale, or they're going to get overtaken. So I know, I mean, I've been to see them at their new offices in London and stuff, and they are really actively looking at new developments, trying new things, and not being afraid to push the boundaries a bit.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we've kind of touched on this a couple of times in past food talk shows. Is this changing trend of how people are consuming food? I mean that in the loosest possible way. You know, especially in urban areas and with a busy lifestyle, fewer and fewer people are actually cooking every meal. I think lots of us enjoy cooking, you know, with things like the Great British Bake Off and all that kind of stuff engenders people to try cooking occasionally. But a lot of people now are moving away from cooking food every night. And are moving towards more takeaway pre-prepared foods.
So the thing that came across at the expo this week is people are saying, we're going to face this because this trend isn't going away. Mm. It's just going to become more and more embedded.
Yep.
Is that people don't cook every day. They don't. They might cook twice a week.
Yeah.
The rest of it, they source their food externally. And that's how it's going. And it's going to be like that for a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all the sort of innovations I was seeing is trying to adjust to that massive shift. Mm. And we say that there's been a huge shift between the high street and online.
Yeah.
There's just a bigger shift, I think, socially from actually coming home and feeling that you provide a meal from actually sourcing a meal, which is a completely different
issue. And has knock-on effect to a load of things like house design, kitchen design and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've got three more interviews from there. And again, all fascinating. We've got Hannah from Chickpea who's taken surplus food. We're seeing this again as a trend as well. Mm. People not liking waste, trying to collect the waste and make something new out of it.
Mm.
And that's what she's doing. And she's making really nice hummus, actually,
really?
From surplus food. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then two very different things. Mushtacks, we've been talking to them, and they have the biggest kitchen in the whole of the UK.
Really?
They've got 55 chefs in there.
Wow.
It's an Indian takeaway in Glasgow. Right. They serve well over 1,000 meals every Friday night. I mean, easy, 1,000 takeaways. And it's an amazing construction that they have. So we're chatting to them about how they organise that. And then my favourite interview really this week, although it's obviously lovely to speak to everybody, is Gary Evans. Right. I really like Gary Evans, and he has this grill, this grilling technology, and he's won an innovation award for it. And he's created a grill that completely changes the way the gas comes out, and he'll explain it on this interview. Mm. And you get no fat. You know that horrible when you do your barbecue and you get all that fat at the bottom. You know, you have a little tray, don't you, full of horrible stuff that you have to clean.
And you throw the grill tray on the grass and hope the dew washes it off in the morning. That kind of thing, and it never does. It just congeals.
He's done this technology where it actually gets burnt, and in the end, at the end of the day, you lift off the grill and all you get is a fine powder, because actually all of those fats have been incinerated. And what you do is you get your Hoover and you Hoover it up and it's all clean.
I'm liking that.
You should watch it on Facebook Live if you want to actually see what it looks like, because it's on there. But a great interview with Gary Evans. So should we listen to those three?
Yeah, let's have a go at that.
We're at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo 2016, and I'm joined by Jeremy Eames, who's normally our presenter on the Tech Talk show. You're quite liking this, though. There's quite a lot of tech around. It's not just food here.
It's not just food, but there's also free trials on the Food Talk show, so I think I should be switching shows.
So when you're on the Tech Talk show, you do unboxing, which means you play around with technology products. We don't. Yep. We taste stuff.
You don't. You've got it so much better.
Oh, no. And we're joined by Hannah McCollum, and she's the founder of Chickpea, which is spelt C-H-I-C-P, and she's bought some little products for us to taste. But before we do that, we are at the Innovation Takeaway show, and there is lots and lots of innovation, really interesting. But I do have to say that while quite a lot of it is takeaway, it's a little bit fried, the food around here, isn't it?
It is. I feel a bit like I'm in the 1990s. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm just from the tech side, but from what I can see, everything seems to be dipped in oil.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of chips as well, chips and fried like hamburgers and stuff, which is all fine, I guess. But we have found a healthy food exhibitor, Hannah, and it's about chickpeas. Do you eat hummus?
I love hummus. I do.
You're going to like this then, you're going to like this. Hannah, hi there. Just tell us a little bit about your company and how it started.
Okay. Hi, so I started Chickpea because of my love for hummus and also my hate for food waste. I did a lot of kind of cooking for private clients, and often I would turn the leftover vegetable dishes into dips the next day. And it was a way to stop food waste, but also saving money for my clients. And the mums loved it because the kids loved it. And they didn't know that they were actually eating really healthy kind of vegetable, fresh kind of food. So I kept doing that, and then I would often also, when I went home after my kind of office job, just always turn my leftovers into hummus the next day. So I decided that actually I would, you know, do something about it and actually see if I could go and put this, you know, into the market. And
so is that a bit like Ready Steady Cook, you know, where you get like 15 different things, you know, I've got an aubergine here and I've got a carrot and I'm going to turn it into something. Is it like that?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. It still is in my kitchen for my own food, but I guess when you want to go into retail, you need to actually kind of stabilise a few flavours. So I've got my five core flavours, and I'm still able to get kind of surplus from them, so it works well.
One of the themes that we're seeing here at the show, and we're definitely getting it on when we have guests on the radio programme, is trying to look at food waste, because it's a crime, actually. And it's quite a problem in a domestic setting. I would imagine it's even worse for a restaurant or takeaway setting. And, of course, waste means you're tipping profits down the drain, essentially. So we're seeing some really interesting sort of circular things going on where people are taking food waste from restaurants or businesses and then turning it into something. Is that how you started? And where on earth do you get your leftovers from?
One of the biggest problems is restaurants, catering. Catering is one of the most difficult kind of industries to get the food quantities right, and because there is also so much choice now, whether it is at you know, parties and in that catering industry, or again on the supermarket shelf, on the menu, it means that it's very difficult to actually judge the amount of food that we need, and there's so many different options, and so therefore you have to almost get the same of each one, so there's bound to be loads of waste on you know, every aspect, and that is where we are so criminal. And again, when we bring it, you know, we go shopping and we see so much is on the shelf, we then probably buy too much, don't know what to buy, and then when we're at home, we don't.
Can I just say that it really stresses me out when I go to a restaurant and there's a menu that's about 50,000 pages long, and they have 50 million dishes. One, I can't ever decide what I want. Two, I don't understand where they're storing it or how they have the time to randomly cook all this food. And I think so. Things like that, I just think moving forward in the food industry, we need to be more cautious about what we're selling. I was reading the other day, I think it was France has now banned supermarkets from their food waste. They're not allowed to throw away waste. They have to resell it or give it to charity or something like that. And I think a system in the UK like that would be really useful here as well.
Yeah, I mean, I much prefer restaurants where you've maybe just got six starters to choose from and six main courses. And everybody thinks, oh, that closes your choices down. But somehow it doesn't seem to. And like you, I know that if there's 50 things on the menu, they're all waiting in the freezer, basically.
And it stresses you out. You get there and, like, you just...
Jeremy, you get stressed out too easily.
I know. You're just, you know, you're hungry and you just want something and then you've suddenly got all this choice and it's just, you know, it's too much.
So where do you get your waste from? How do you make that work?
So at the moment I'm getting them from London markets and I kind of go around either in my car or my bike. And very much I've got a few suppliers who I work with or who point me in the right direction. Kind of early mornings, they're often open from 12 till 6, 7 a.m. So if you go around at the end, a lot of, you know, if it's not surplus, it's class 2. And just see, you know, where some suppliers might need help because they've got too much, they can't sell it, or because it's just wonky or a bag's broken. I mean, that's where it all started. And then I've got some farmers who I will be able to work with directly should I scale and need them in larger amounts. So that's the aim. The aim originally was supermarkets, to get it directly from the supermarkets, but that's expensive and the regulations don't allow me to do that. But with all this hype about food waste and in the news at the moment, that I hope will change in time.
Right, Jeremy, you're not used to the food tasting thing. I do this all the time. That's one of the joys of my job. So Hannah's provided us with some rosemary and thyme pita chips. They aren't hers, but they're a friend of hers. Okay. And you're going to taste the first one. Now, the first one looks very yellow. It's a very sunshine yellow. What have we got there, Hannah?
So it's carrot, ginger and turmeric hummus. And the reason why it's bright, kind of orange yellow, is because it's all raw vegetables and it's root ginger, root turmeric, so it's really fresh. It's all natural, natural bright colour.
And for those that don't know, hummus is basically chickpeas?
Yeah, so it's chickpeas and tahini, a bit of rapeseed oil, as you know, lemon juice, garlic as the base, and then the raw vegetables kind of blended in with it, yeah.
And tahini is sesame seeds, is that right? See, I knew all that. Go on then, Jeremy, go on, have a little taste of this.
It's very inviting looking.
It looks great. It looks like sunshine. It looks like sunshine. Mmm, it's frowning.
It's earthy, really earthy, really delicious. It's not spicy because I don't really like spice. It's just ripe. Perfect.
Perfect. Do you want to taste the other one? The other one is very green. It looks like mushy peas colour. Mushy pea colour. It's very green. But what's in this one?
So this is fresh herbs. So it's called the herby hummus, predominantly parsley. And then again with the hummus base.
Jeremy's now... There's a good look on his face. What do you think of that one?
It tastes a bit like cheese in a weird way. I don't know.
He's never coming on the food talk show again. He's so rubbish.
In a good way.
I'm so sorry about that. He's so bad at tasting these things. Do you want to just stick to the carroty one next time?
Yeah, maybe.
How can that taste of cheese? I'm going to taste it now.
It tastes kind of minty and fresh. It just kind of has a kind of cheesy aftertaste. Do you agree?
I'm sorry, it's not coming on the show again.
Yeah.
I don't see where you get that from. No, I don't think
not
so.
Sure.
No.
In a good way.
It tastes really herby. Yeah, for me, you can really taste parsley. He hasn't got any taste buds, honestly. But and Hannah, how do people get hold of your stuff? So do you sell it to domestic clients, or how do we get hold of it?
So I was selling kind of online to my on my website and that kind of thing, but now I am focusing on retail as well as food service. So they're currently being stocked in Fortnum and Mason, Soho Farmhouse, launching with Whole Foods in November, along with quite a few other stores, from places in Barnes to Eat 17 in Hackney, Spa and Dalston. And
wow, really taking off then. And the sort of kudos of getting it in Fortnum and Mason. I think it's a lovely product. And the fact that it's from food waste, you feel good, don't you, sort of eating it?
You feel really healthy. Because I have a habit of buying a packet of carrot sticks and then a packet of hummus from Tesco's and eating the whole pot. And I kind of feel guilty of it. I feel like I'm telling myself it's really healthy. But I actually think with these products, it would be okay to do that. Because they'll help their... they're really ground and healthy.
Don't taste like cheese, though. Well, thank you very much, Hannah, for joining us. Thank you.
No, thank you. And just to let you know, it does actually have half the fat of any supermarket hummus. So there you go.
See, you can have me back on the food talk show now. So, yeah.
Thank you, Hannah. I'm speaking to Ajmal Mushtaq, who owns the most amazing business. And I'm joined by Jeremy Eames, who's our Tech Talk presenter. Ajmal, I know, I've been sitting judging the Innovation Awards with you here at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo. And I know that you have probably the biggest restaurant in the whole, restaurant kitchen in the whole of the UK. Now, is this really true?
Yes, it is. I built Britain's largest kitchen 2 years ago to cater for the growing demand in the takeaway and home delivery business. It's phenomenal, the size of it. And it's made our life so much easier.
So you've just shown me a video of it, a sort of 360 degree video. It looks enormous. It looks like the size of, I don't know, like a basketball court, I think, sort of size, something like that. And I can see that there's something like 50 or 60 chefs all working inside there. It's absolutely huge. Why did you feel the need to make a kitchen that big? And how has it made you more efficient?
Well, the Mushtaq's business has grown phenomenally over the years, and all I'm doing is just fulfilling the customer demand. And to feed the demand, I had to build a very big kitchen. So I've got 55 people working in that operation, and we cook the food fresh and deliver it within half an hour.
And sorry, what types of food do you cook? Is it just one particular type, or are you cooking all sorts of different cuisines?
It's one brand of food, and that is proper Indian food. I've got 10 dishes on the menu. It's the 10 dishes that we eat at home, and that's what I've got on the menu.
I love Indian food. I love Indian food cooked properly, and I don't go to Indian takeaways anymore because, in general, I feel quite disappointed. I quite like sitting in a proper Indian restaurant where they've got a really good kitchen, but you know, the takeaway version of Indian for me is gone down and down and down. Are you reaping the benefit of that because you just do really good home cooked food?
Totally. We're not using any artificial colorings, any processed meats, nothing out of a jar. It's just traditional cooking, exactly the same food we eat at home, and that's been, it's driven massive volume to the restaurant. It's been really, really successful. And my parents came to this country back in the 60s and they opened up their first restaurant in the 70s. And they only had one skill, and that was how to cook great tasting Indian food. And I've simply carried that tradition on to this day.
But scaled it up.
Yep.
So essentially what you're saying is the food is no different. What you've tried to work out is how can I do that en masse without losing any quality?
Exactly. So we've basically scaled up, whereas previously it was a smaller restaurant or a smaller kitchen that can only do X amount. We've now built a new kitchen and we can really cater for an unlimited amount of customers now.
Unlimited amount. So tell us, say, on a Friday night, which for me, when I come home from work, Friday, I feel like I need a little bit of spice in my life, a little bit of chili. Not what you think, Jeremy, not what you think. A little bit of spice. And how many people are you serving on a Friday night, for example?
Possibly in the region of 1,000 meals on a Friday night.
Wow.
That's amazing. But making sure you get the quality, making sure it's all hot, making sure, you know, that people are coming back time and time again.
And so do you have somebody who works in the kitchen who tests everything before it goes out?
Yes, and that's me.
And that's you.
You don't look very fat, though. You look very, very, very healthy. Is that because your food is, as you say, good home-cooked food and not full of ghee and oils and all the things that, you know, takeaways sometimes are traditionally associated with?
Yes, Indian food. The Indian food that I cook is totally healthy. It's onion, water, protein and dried spices. That's it. There's nothing else. And Indian food really is that healthy. But there's a common misconception, and there is, because people are adding creams and sugars and all sorts of stuff to bulk it up, or bulking agents. Yes, thank you very much. I'll take that as a compliment. I'm really slim. My wife would wish I'm a bit slimmer. It's proper Indian food. It's healthy. It's got real health benefits, and it's very tasty as well.
So, as you know, Sue, I can't have any dairy at all. And the main issue I find with Indian food is that a lot of the curries and things have a lot of cream in them. And when you ask for them without cream, sometimes they still put cream in it or a dollop of cream, and it's really hard. So do you not use any kind of dairy products, or do you use coconut cream? And
there's one dish that we've got that uses a touch of cream, but most of our food doesn't have any cream in it at all.
And I know you've got lots of business interests, and you're very involved in the show here. Can you tell us what you're seeing in terms of trends in takeaway? Because certainly the companies that I deal with in London, so many people are not cooking at home anymore, and they are looking at ways of having healthy food. Are you finding that in Glasgow?
The trend for takeaways is growing year on year. More and more people are eating out, and I don't think this trend is going to change anytime soon. People just aren't cooking in the house, and it's actually sometimes cheaper to get order in a takeaway than it is to go to the supermarket, buy the ingredients, stand over the cooker and cook dinner. So I think there's real potential for this market to grow further.
And do you cook at home, Jeremy?
I'm terrible. I am the market that he's just described. I do not ever cook. I would much rather eat out or get a takeaway. But I will say that I am quite health conscious. That's what puts me off about getting takeaways generally, is that when I think of Indian food, I think of unhealthy, you know, lots of creams, lots of naan breads, like all that, all those kind of dishes. Same with Chinese food, all of those takeaways. So to hear that you're doing something that's actually a takeaway that's healthy, I mean, that's right on my street.
But I think that's what people are looking for. And certainly when you get to people living in the middle of cities, they don't have a kitchen anymore, almost. No. Or they'll have a little thing on the side of a living room, but which is part of the living room. And people don't have the space or the equipment.
And the time. The thing I found when I was living in London is that you're just so busy. It doesn't matter whether you're working or if you're out or anything. I don't have the time to come home and cook for 2 hours and cook myself.
Yes, you do, and you don't have to cook for 2 hours. I'm a typical boy. you're this target market, isn't he, really?
Yeah, perfect. If you're not cooking, that's good for the takeaway sector as a whole.
Well done.
Okay, and where can people find out about it? Presumably, if they live in Glasgow, they'll know exactly who you are and where you are based.
Yeah, so we're based just on the outskirts of Glasgow. It's Mushtaq's restaurant, based in Hamilton. It takes 15 minutes from the centre of Glasgow, and it's a cracking little place. You know, the actual dining area is quite small, but the takeaway and carry out element of the business is massive.
And I think that's the way it's going to go. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and I know you're involved with the show, so it's very busy here and it looks good, so I hope the rest of the show is going to be good.
4 years ago, this was it was a good show. Since then, it's just got bigger and better year on year. And today, this is a fantastic event. And anyone who is in the takeaway or restaurant sector, this is a must-attend event.
They must do, because some of the technology is great, isn't it, Jeremy? And you need to be up to speed with what's going on, because it's moving fast.
It's moving so fast, yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm joined by Gary Evans, who's Managing Director of Synergy Grill. I've been lucky enough to be on a judging panel for the Kitchen Innovation Award here today. And Gary's company has just won. Yes. He's just won because this product is incredible. It's absolutely amazing. And I just you have to see it, because otherwise you wouldn't believe it. And essentially we've got a chef cooking in the background here with some lovely, lovely chicken. And it looks just like a normal grill. Bit of greasy stuff going on, lots of smoke and all that sort of thing. But it is completely different from anything else, isn't it, Gary? Can you just explain exactly how it works?
I'll try and give you a synopsis, just a potted history of us and what the grill does. So American-type char grills, I call them, gas-guzzling char grills, have been around for years. And when we developed this, what I want to do is bring something more innovative, more gas savings than any other char grill on the market. So I developed this with air going into the burner, so it gives a nice lean burn, uses very little gas. And then we went to the next steps of what else can we do with this technology? How can we get rid of these dirty old fat trays you see on TV all the time about fatbergs and people putting rubbish down the drain? So we wanted to stop that.
So just to get that clear then, Gary, do you mean all those sort of fat drip things that get in a tray underneath? And sometimes I get that I forget to clear mine, and it catches light. And also people are shoving that stuff down the drain, aren't they? Is that what you mean?
Well, I think they are. A lot of people say they're not. Okay. But it's very easy to do, and a lot of sort of restaurants that, you know, should know better sometimes do. But let's put that aside for the moment. What I wanted to offer was where you can Hoover, you can vacuum the grill and take the dust away.
So you get your Hoover you clear it up. Right, so that nobody's going to believe this, but I've seen it for myself. So essentially what happens is you've got technology that makes that stuff so, I suppose, hot, is it? That actually it ends up forming a powder, and instead of it being all greasy, the powder literally drops to the bottom and you can Hoover it up afterwards. Is that right?
Well, that's right. So what it is, we use the actual fats and oils that drip as a fuel, if you like, because as they drip down from the food, they hit a high heat bed, and that actually vaporizes the fats, and it pushes the flavor and the goodness back up, because fat is bad for us, but there's a lot of taste in it. So it pushes that back up into the meat, and then what's left turns to a dust. So you just vacuum it away.
Now, I've seen this, and nobody's going to believe it, but he's cooking, like, hamburgers, chicken, and it is really true. Instead of all that fat, you know, at the bottom, which you have to clear up, you literally just let it cool down afterwards. When you finish cooking, you get a Hoover, and you Hoover it up. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. No wonder you won the Kitchen Innovation Award for 2016. And how can restaurateurs and people get hold of your product?
Get hold of us. Well, obviously, they can visit our website at www.synergygrill.com. We're a Cambridgeshire-based company. We're very proud to be based here in the UK, making a UK product and employing UK people. All our suppliers are from the UK. So, you know, we are a very local company, not far out of London, up in Cambridgeshire. And they can get us on the website anytime.
And I know you're making these units yourself, which is great, because it means you're creating jobs. And as you say, it's all British, which is fantastic. In terms of the energy savings, though, there's considerable energy savings, you know, as well, if you use this product, isn't there?
Massive energy savings with Synergy over any other char grill, as I say. And that's done by just a simple thing we learned in school, really, with our Bunsen burner. Our first chemistry lesson, the teacher showed us how to adjust the flame and air, gas and air together to give a really hot flame. And all I've done is taken that very simple scientific, you know, fact and brought it into the commercial cooking world. Why nobody else has done it before, I don't know, because why would you just burn gas when you can burn air, which is free, and get the energy from that and get the heat from that? So that's why we use less gas.
Well, when you put it like that, it sounds very obvious, but I have to say that I failed my chemistry O-level, so I'm probably talking to the wrong person. Well, we really wish you luck with it. It's a great product, and again, if anybody's really interested, it's Synergy Grill. You know, Google them, have a look at it, and really deserved winner of the Kitchen Innovation Award. Thank you very much, Gary.
Thank you, and I've enjoyed the show. The show's been a great success, and we're really enjoying ourselves, and thank you. Much appreciated.
Hey, I want one.
How interesting.
I want one. And I want it now.
Such a nice guy. Such a nice guy. And providing all those jobs, and it's British, and they're manufacturing it in Cambridge. It's just, and why wasn't it thought of
before?
There's
just so much
to like. The best ideas are like that, though.
There's just so much to like about that. And it was the throwaway thing at the end. Yeah, well, it's just basic Bunsen burner chemistry, really. Don't know why nobody else thought of it.
Well, indeed.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
You do need to check out the Facebook Live video, though, because you won't believe it unless you see it. It's great.
I'm going to buy one.
Yeah, they only sell to restaurants, but knowing you, you'll just say you've got one.
I'm going to open a restaurant just so I can buy one.
Just so you can have one. Great. Well, after all that great stuff at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation 2016, and we'll do a few more of those interviews next week, because there's some amazing products out there. We're joined by Tara May. And I know Tara because I've been talking to her a few weeks ago about the Bread and Butter 2-day conference. And it's a great conference, Paul. So many people want to get into the food area sector in some way or another.
Yep.
And sometimes it's a lifestyle choice, but sometimes people are taking it as a really serious, serious business.
Yep.
And they need help and they need advice, because it's actually quite a complicated market. It's not, you know, distribution's difficult. We know that.
We've talked about this quite a lot on the show, haven't we? The difference between being a food producer and being a business person is where a lot of people fall down. And I absolutely love the Bread and Butter concept.
Yeah,
I just,
Bread
as
and
soon
Butter.
As I heard
it's
that,
great
I just,
name, isn't it?
I just thought that is brilliant. I wish I owned that.
Yeah, so Bread and Butter, 2-day conference. And
Tara has managed to get the most amazing lineup of speakers. I don't know how she's done it. So I'm going to ask her in a minute.
We will question her in a minute. Yeah.
And we've got people like John Stapleton, who started up the Covent Garden Soup Company. There's Mark Palmer, who's the marketing guru at Pret A Manger. There's Geeta Sidhu Rob from Nosh Detox. She's been on this program.
Yeah, she has. Yeah.
She's now reached 2 million turnover, wow, Geeta, okay. And so she's explaining how she's done that. And then people like Nick Kilby of Tea Pigs talking about scaling up, which is a really big issue, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Tara, welcome. Welcome to the show. And tell us, why did you start this bread and butter thing? I mean, I personally think there's a massive need for it, but what sparked you to do something about it?
Well, I started bread and butter because a few years ago, I started my own food business. And I was out there and I was really passionate about what I was doing, but I was kind of doing everything on my own. And it was just so lonely and so confusing. And I really had no idea what I was doing.
It's just very much a sort of kitchen table type sort of operation. Because so many of them are.
Yes, exactly. It was, you know, totally driven by passion, completely bootstrapped. And things that, you know, in hindsight seemed really obvious took me, you know, anything from 3 to 6 months to figure out. And I really wanted to give people the opportunity to learn from people who had kind of been there and done it.
So learn from people's mistakes or learn from people's experience rather than having the trauma of going through that yourself.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and getting inspired by people who have really achieved things that you want to achieve as well. And looking at, for example, different kinds of business models, the different ways that you can get your product out there. Because I think when you're sitting at home alone in your kitchen and you're trying to make this work, sometimes, you know, your confidence can take a little bit of a battering. And bread and butter is just as much about empowering people and saying that, you know, they can achieve these things. And let's all listen to people who have done it.
Absolutely. One of the things you said early on when you started talking there, which struck me, was it took you kind of 3 to 6 months to realise some things. In my experience, there are some people that take an awful lot longer than that to come around to the idea that they're not doing something quite right. And a lot of that is because, not because they're stupid or anything like that, it's their focus is in a different place. As you said, most people that start a food-related business start on some basis of passion. There's something they like about the food they're cooking, be it a cultural thing.
Or they're really, really good at something. And people go, oh, you must buy some of that. You ought to package it up and sell it.
And the thing is, that's what they focus on, the recipes, the production of the products and all the rest of it. But as I said earlier, there comes a point when it becomes a business. And it's the business things that you have to start thinking about to make it actually work.
Absolutely. And that's, I guess, how bread and butter is a little different to a lot of the trade shows out there that focus very much on taste and on the product. What we're saying to food producers is, yes, you know, you definitely have the product side nailed. Now we want to look at the business side of things to make sure that product really gets out there.
Yeah.
And just run us through some of the people that are talking, some of the themes that you're keen to push in terms of business, because there's lots of ways that you need to get things organised for business. Sales, of course, is critical. If you're not getting those sales in, it's never going to work. But what are the themes that you're really keen to push?
So we're talking this year a lot about funding. So about how to access funding, when to access it, and how much equity to give away if you want to give away equity, and really thinking about if you want to pursue this this sort of route of getting investment, how you can go about it and still kind of keep control of your company. I think that particularly because of the advances in the tech sector, getting investment quite early on is a very attractive proposition for a lot of new companies.
But at what price, I think you're saying, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
And
so
it's when you're at your most naive as well, unfortunately, if you haven't run a business before. And too many people, in my experience, give away too much equity too soon.
Yeah, it's so difficult to value your business when you haven't really got, you know, say, 3 years of traction behind you. And so it's kind of laying it out on the table, I think, is what Bread and Butter is all about, is kind of saying, look, this is what other people have done, and these are the different routes that people have kind of gone through. One of our speakers, Doisian Dam, he raised £150,000 in just 48 hours. And these things, you know, they didn't really happen 10 years ago, and that there's all this sort of hype and excitement about it. And we want people to kind of keep it real, I guess, and say, okay, if you're going to get £150,000 in 2 days,
what are you going to spend it on for a start? It? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no good having it and then thinking, oh, what shall I do? You really need a plan. You need a really good plan.
I absolutely 100% agree. I actually operate as an angel investor, and I invest in startup businesses, and I spend the first few weeks of meeting new businesses by telling them, you really, really, really shouldn't ask me to take over some of your company. You really shouldn't, because it's a really bad move. Mm. Because having an outside investor early on in something, there are so many aspects to that need to be thought through. But one of the problems is, and I think you've identified it in a much nicer way than I identify it, is that people are quite naive. You know, and they go, I need money. Yeah. Somebody needs to invest in my business. It's the only way I can do it.
And the people that are investing are very experienced.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you are vulnerable, I think, often.
Yeah.
And you need to come to things like Bread and Butter to just understand how it
works.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's, particularly because of social media, there's just so much more access to all these success stories. And I think that there's an incredible pressure on food producers to kind of explode in their growth every store overnight.
Yeah.
And I guess what we're trying to say is, well, no, you know, there are other ways of doing it. It's much better to grow at a slow and steady and sustainable rate than try and secure, say, I don't know, $250,000 in investment and then sort of burn out after 18 months.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Couldn't agree more. You know, you're absolutely right, Tara. There is this pressure. And you also get, I call it the spotted a gap in the market syndrome, where when people are successful, they then have a backstory. And the backstory is, yeah, well, you know, I spotted a gap in the market, I started to make it, and I made £1 million in 3 weeks. You know, the fact is they didn't do any of that. It's just an easy way of doing their backstory. The vast majority of people didn't spot anything. They just started doing something, and then it kind of worked because people liked it. And then they found a way of financing it and taking it to the next level. But because we hear a lot of these, I was successful really quick stories, people assume they've got to do the same thing. They've got to arrive somewhere really quickly.
But it's like any business, Paul, as well you know, is if you promise a lot and then underdeliver, eventually you're going to fail. So, you know, it's great being in 260 Waitrose stores, but if you keep missing your delivery slots, they will just delist you immediately because they're a business and they won't put up with that.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, it's great to go to these sort of conferences to understand at the rate at which you should grow so that you're constantly exceeding expectations and you're building your success rather than trying to fail. Well, failing and learning by mistakes when you're very exposed and very public, don't you think?
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to hear from our speakers about, you know, how they've achieved these things. Because I think we spent a long time kind of choosing the kind of people that we wanted to invite along, and we chose them because they were willing to be totally open.
Sure.
I've been to lots of these sort of conferences where you do hear these sort of glamorized, oh, I just I made something in my kitchen and then oops, I was a millionaire and it was amazing.
Right. Of course you were.
And we didn't really want that. We wanted the real honest stuff. Well, you know, what were the struggles and what did you do when things go wrong and who did you argue with and what happened so that people can use that information and then kind of achieve the businesses that they want to have.
Absolutely.
It's impossible to be in business and it not be a struggle, isn't it, Paul?
Absolutely.
People not paying you or something happens and you're gonna have to fight if you're in business at some point, aren't you?
Absolutely. And that's what I love about the Bread and Butter Conference is you've got people there that are telling you, we've made the mistake so you don't have to. Yeah. This is how we grew our business, and these are the things that we got wrong, and these are the things we got right, and this is how it works. So basically, you can hit the ground running with a better idea of not having to make the same mistakes over and over again because other people have already done it and learnt a lesson from it. So I love the idea.
You're doing this as a tour, though, aren't you? Have I got that right, Tara? So we've got this one in London on the 12th and 13th of November. And I urge anybody who's remotely thinking of going into the food area or whatever to check out the Bread and Butter Conference. You should be there. But you're doing it in other cities as well, are you?
So we've already started our sort of roadshow, which is a kind of tour around the UK where we want to engage with all these sort of clusters, I guess, of food producers up and down the country, because we've done a lot of work in London and certainly lots of other people are doing things in London. But we didn't want the rest of the country to feel forgotten. So we decided that we would go on a little tour and get to know the needs and the concerns, I guess, and the support that people needed in the rest of the country. Because in London, it's much easier to access information, easier to access a network.
Sure.
And it was fantastic, actually, having a look at lots of different kinds of businesses. And how they differed from sort of north to south.
Absolutely. And of course, once you get outside of the big metropolitan areas, there are lots of producers that are farms and market gardeners and things like that that you don't get in big urban areas, that have developed their products from the land and from...
in a different way.
In a completely different way. So you're absolutely right.
You've also got speed mentoring. So I thought that was quite an interesting concept. What's that?
Yes, that's right. So we have our advice bar. Which is a sort of speed mentoring area for producers to come along and get the answers that they need. Because sometimes as you're running your business, you just need to know, at what point do I need to register for VAT, and if my product doesn't count for VAT, do I still need to register? What do I need to do? It's all very stressful, and you just need the answer there
sure.
and then.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're hoping to do at the Advice Bar, is if you've got a question and you just need
a quick answer.
Sentence of information... Yeah. That's where
you need
to be.
Specific to you. That's really good, isn't it? Yeah. And you've got a Food Biz Boot Camp, which is an intensive one-day event based on creating a plan for growth. Again, really important stuff, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So that's in our Startup Studios area. So that's basically a sort of speed food MBA. You arrive and
I like it.
Everything's downloaded into your brain.
She is really smart, yeah.
And that should be sort of a really good foundation of people who want to get their business off the ground and they just need all the little bits and bobs. There's a really nice checklist that we're distributing as well if you attend that session. So it should be good fun.
Okay, fantastic. So people need to go on breadandbutterfest.com, and it's on Saturday 12th November, Sunday 13th of November is the London one. It's in the Institute of Directors, if anybody knows, Pall Mall.
And Pall Mall.
Easy to get to. We're going to do some radio interviews and stuff there, Paul, because it's such an interesting concept and there's so many great people there that we're going to rock up with Tara and try and get some of that advice ourselves, which I think would be great. So we'll be revisiting this for sure.
Yeah, I love it. As a concept, I really do love it. There is a massive demand for it. Here where we are, our studios are in Kent, we have literally thousands of small food producers that are trying to struggle to start, you know, to turn brilliant products into businesses. So I love what you're doing. It is so necessary and so needed.
And I love the approach as well, because we've got real people who've hit those problems, found a way of overcoming them and are successful. So many people are giving business advice and I don't actually think they're really particularly successful, Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got a great backstory, but okay, well, tell us what your turnover and your profit is. Oh, well.
Made
any yet. These are real business people who've done really, really well.
And it brings us back to one of our recurring themes. It's about collaboration.
Mm.
Yeah, people helping other people, and it's a
that's that phrase, isn't it? Send the elevator down.
Yeah, exactly.
You've done it, so send it down and help other people up. Yeah. So we're loving it, Tara. And to say, we'll just do one more thing on the website, breadandbutterfest.com. Saturday 12th of November, Sunday the 13th of November. So it doesn't interfere with work. You should be there if you're interested in setting up a food business.
Definitely.
Thank you very much. So what did you think of today's programme, Paul?
I thought it was really brilliant. We've had some fantastic people, you know, finishing off with Tara, which is, you know, I just love what she's doing.
She's
really pulled it together in a lovely way. I was fascinated by the grill and I want one.
I'll give you Mark's details.
Yeah, I love just...
Mark's? Where's that come from? Gary's details. Gary's, say Mark.
I loved the delivery dog and the whole Just Eat story. Fantastic. And, you know... The massive, can I do my joke? about chicken Mars Barlas?
Hurry up! No, no, they don't do deep fried Mars Barlas.
Do they not
in Scotland? No, it's a myth.
Not in that 55 chef. Not a single Mars bar.
He does amazing food, honestly, really great food. And the point of his business is that actually he's taken what his parents used to do, cooking at home, in the way that he used to do it, and he's found a way to scale it.
Fantastic.
And that's, again, that's one of the sort of themes that Tara will be talking about at Bread and Butter Conference.
Absolutely.
So we'll have a couple more of those from the innovation thing next week. Mm. And we haven't tasted any food this week, have we?
I'm hungry. We've been foodless for a couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah.
Which is good because I'm starting to lose weight now, which is lovely. Yeah, which is lovely. I've been trying to do that for ages.
Not on purpose, but we don't have any food producers for the last couple of weeks. But that's the whole point of the Food Talk programme, is to have a really good mix of people.
Absolutely. And it's been some fascinating people that we've talked to. And it's been really great to hear from Tara. Thank you very much. But we're kind of at the end of another Food Talk show, sadly.
And thinner.
We're thinner and wiser.
And happier.
And happier, absolutely. And what's not to like with that?
Exactly.
But I'm going off for a pizza now.
No, I thought you might.
So thank you so much for joining us on the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. We'll be back with the Food Talk Show for another programme next Thursday at 4 o'clock. In the meantime, have a fabulous week, and we will see you all very soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.